audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 180,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/bookhype. Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of Book Hype. I'm Jen and I'm joined by Karen and Brittany tonight. How's it going, girls?
Hello.
Hi.
And tonight, this episode is our book discussion episode, and we are going to be discussing Passenger by Alexandra Bracken. We'll get to that in a minute. We're not going to talk about it, even though I really, really want to. We'll talk about it shortly. But let's talk about, of course, what we've been reading first. So, Miss Karen, why don't you go ahead and tell us what you've been reading?
My super long list, right?
Always.
Yes. I have one book this week because, well, I had to read Passenger 2 and I was just super busy, but I read This Raging Light by Estelle Laurie, and this book was so good. It's a contemporary and it's got a little bit of romance in it, but it's a really kind of dark story about this girl being abandoned by her mother. And it kind of goes through everything she has to go through to take care of her sister in the process and make sure that nobody knows what's going on. And it's just a really well-written book, and it deals with a lot of big aspects, but it also has this really lovely love story in it too that kind of threads its way throughout. And overall, it's just like a really well-balanced book, and I would highly recommend it.
Excellent. All right, Miss Brittany, let's see what you've been reading, because I know you took Kristen up on some of her suggestions. So
yeah, so if anyone tuned in to the news around the world, I got hit with a blizzard this weekend. And so I just stayed inside and I read, and I took Kristen up on this new series by L. Kennedy. The third book in the off-campus series just came out a few weeks ago, and Kristen reviewed it, but I didn't know it was the third book. So of course I had to go back and read the first two. And it is another hockey love story series. And again, it took up my entire weekend. The first one is called The Deal. And it focuses on the hockey guy named Garrett. And then the second one is The Mistake, which focuses on his friend Logan, who, again, is like, you know, all the characters pop up within each other's books. And it was wonderful. And The Deal was so good. So I have a little bit of a thing for hockey romance now. And then I decided in my Amazon Kindle haze to try their like Kindle Unlimited thing, and because you get like the 30 days free.
Yeah.
There's not as much available on it as I was hoping. It's not really like, I mean, all the Harry Potter books are there, and like there's a bunch of I got a couple of books that I'm looking forward to reading during this week's commute, just things that I wouldn't have normally picked up. But I wanted to stick with my, like, you know, sports player romance kick. So I downloaded a book called Game On by Kate McCoy. And it's about this journalist who gets assigned to this, like, up-and-coming baseball player in Austin, Texas. And they have a fling and everybody's all mushy. And it was great. So I read that yesterday morning because I just needed a change of pace from hockey. So I went to
baseball
before I go back and finish the off-campus series this week.
Yeah, I feel like hockey is appropriate given the time period we're in. It's winter, kind of fits the theme. It'd be all right.
Yeah, but then as soon as you're done shoveling, you're like, hot Texas baseball sounds
you're like,
just
yes,
about right.
Bring on the sunshine. Yeah, no, we didn't get as much snow as you did. Great, thank goodness, because I was like, oh, I don't know. I don't want snow. So luckily we didn't have as much as you. I was grateful. Anyway, so for me, what I've been reading this week, while it did snow on Saturday and I didn't do a thing, Roxanne St. Clair is a romance writer, and one of the series of books that she's been writing is Barefoot Bay. If you guys follow her on like Facebook or anything, you see she's always talking about this series, And the reason I picked up this particular set of the series, it's like it comes in different chunks. There's like a billionaire series and a wedding series. And this is the like bodyguard series. And the reason I picked up this particular set of books is because from a different series of hers, there's this character, Gabe Rossi, who she's finally created like his full-on story. But in order to set it up, she needed to create this Barefoot Bay, I think it's Barefoot with the Bodyguards, I don't know, whatever it is. So I had to read the first two books, and now I'm waiting for Gabe's actual book, even though he's in all the other books, which comes out like the first week of February. So that's what I spent my my weekend reading, were these Barefoot Bay books by Roxanne St. Clair. And I love her. She writes really, really fun, like little romance stories. And the stories that Gabe comes out of are more of her like action mystery stories, which I really like too. So they have romance, but they also have like these mysteries and this action and stuff in them. So it's a lot of fun. And I love this family. Gabe comes from this big Italian family, and they all have like, they're either private investigators or FBI agents, and there's always some murder mystery going on. So it was a lot of different things thrown into a story at once. And it took place, this particular set of books takes place like down in Florida on the beach. Like, so again, I understood, like I was craving the warmth too this weekend. So I definitely read books about the beach, and I was a little sad that I couldn't go to the beach. Mainly because they were all flooded up here.
I was going to say, they're pretty flooded right now. So
there was, yeah, my favorite part is they showed pictures of the coastline and like all the like really nice towns along the coast. And literally the streets are flooded, but there are like huge ice chunks floating
down the street. Yeah, it's like apocalyptic. Like it's just like,
so, like it looks like little glaciers. Icebergs. Where's the Titanic?
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, it was crazy. So yeah, but that's what I read this weekend, because I like those books. They're really fun. So if you guys have never read Roxanne St. Clair, pick up something from her, because her stuff is all really, really good. I haven't really come across anything from her that I didn't like, and she's really funny on Facebook. So check her out. All right, just as a reminder, what our next two books would be, because we're going to do Passenger tonight, and I think we have a lot to say about it. But our next month book is going to be Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. Karen, can we get a little update on your Jane Austen reading? You thought I was going to forget. You thought I was going to let it go, didn't you?
The world is conspiring against Karen, because everywhere I turn, it's like, Pride and Prejudice, watch Pride and Prejudice now. And and the Twitter poll, strongly in favor of Karen, either absolutely having to read it or it would help. So I'm leaning toward,
wow, Karen,
I'd have to pick up some Jane Austen.
I'm thinking it might happen.
Okay, look, here's the update. I have not done anything yet, but I did see the Twitter poll. Look, I've been busy, okay? There's a lot going on right now. But I did see the Twitter poll, and even though I was considering going into it not knowing anything, I figured maybe that's not the best idea. So, I don't know. If I can fit it in this week, I will try my hardest, but I can't guarantee that.
Oh, Karen. All right.
All right. But can we also say that potentially, if I may be so bold, we could possibly do a Jane Austen episode down the line.
Yes, we can, but that requires you to like read and watch.
Right, which I'm totally willing to do. I just don't know how soon I can do it.
Okay. All right. Yes.
I will give you one little task, though, before you read Pride, Prejudice, and Zombies. Read the first two pages of Pride and Prejudice, because it's just I love the intro of Pride and Prejudice and Zombies so much. And I think knowing the Jane, like Pride and Prejudice intro, is just so good.
Okay.
All right. So that's your mini homework, like brief homework from Brittany. <Yeah. laughs> My homework would be extensive. Be grateful. I used to teach Jane Austen, Karen. Be lucky I haven't sent you like notes and questions and like outlines. It hasn't happened yet. I'm trying to behave myself, but it's hard. Anyway, there's another series I thought about after we get off, and after we had like, you guys heard what we talked about, but you didn't hear what happened after we signed off. It was very lengthy. There was a long, in-depth conversation with Karen.
Yeah.
about what she needed to do. We spared you all from it, but it was lengthy. But and then I thought, there's this other series called Lost in Austin.
Yes.
Have you? Yes. Thank you, Brittany. Thank you. It is really, really fun. And Karen, I could see how you would really like that one, actually.
Yeah.
Even if you didn't like anything else.
Absolutely.
I think you would absolutely like Lost in Austin. It's very good. All right, but we'll get back to that for another time. So, February book is Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. And as always, we're going to tell you guys, if you want to pick it up from Audible, if you're too busy and don't think you're going to be able to read it in time, definitely check out Audible. It's available. It has a lovely, lovely narrator. And you can pick it up at audiblepodcast.com/bookhype for free if you have not tried out their service yet. So give that a shot for our February book so that you are prepared and ready to go. Just like Karen's going to be. Yay, Karen. All right, let's get on to this book discussion because there's just so much to talk about. First of all, it was a 500-page book. It was a beast. A beast. But it didn't feel like a 500-page book, I don't think. So let's start off with buy or borrow. Karen, I'm going to let you go first.
Okay, I'm going to say borrow because I'm not entirely sure that this book is going to be for everyone. I had a little bit of trouble getting into it because of the historical aspects, which feel very detailed for me. And when
they're glorious, Karen, glorious.
I mean, some people feel that way. I do not. When you spend 2 pages talking about how she's putting on her dress and all the different layers, I just tend to like my eyes glaze over, which I find hilarious because I have a degree in art history. I have a minor in history.
Uh-huh.
Like, history is my thing, but I just can't always absorb all of that information. I want to get to the action and the explosions and the gunfights. But I think some people that's going to sit with them very, very well, but not necessarily everybody. If you can get past that, though, excellent book, excellent story with some really cool twists. So
yes,
give it a try. Don't give up on it within those first like 50 to 100 pages if you feel overwhelmed like I did, because it's worth it.
Okay, Brittany.
I'm going to give a rare buy because the ending left me so frustrated that I need the next book right now. So I think I'm actually probably like, this is a book that you're going to have to go back and skim just to kind of remember how the world works. And it's very interesting. I thought I would be bored with it quicker than I was. But like Karen said, there's a lot of surprises and a lot of things that come up that you're like, oh, right. Like, I kind of want to see where they're going to go next. And like, you kind of already know based on, you know, like the little clues that they left at the beginning of the book. But then there's like great relationships and who they're going to meet and who's where and what year it is. And I really, really enjoyed it. So I think I'm going to stick with bye and reread it again before the next one comes out, which will be in a very long time from now.
Probably, yeah. I'm also going to say bye. I really loved this book. I love the setup of time travel in this book a lot. Like, it's different, but not so different. It seems out of left field when it comes to time travel. And I love the twists. And I love the old stuff. Like, I don't like history, which is super funny that Karen has a history major and all this other stuff. And Karen doesn't like the historic facts of the book, where I hate history. But I love the historic facts of the book. Like, I love reading historical fiction. Like, I love it. I love reading about, like, old time periods. And so this is really, I guess I should say I hate history in a history classroom because I never had a good history teacher. Maybe that's what it really boils down to. But I love this. I love the writing. I thought the writing was beautiful in a lot of the places in the books. And then the relationships and the characters are always so solid in, you know, Alex's book. So I really loved it. Anyway, so for those of you who want a recap of the plot, this book is about a girl, Etta, from the future. She finds out she's a traveler, which means she can travel through time. And she's essentially kidnapped by this girl, Sophia, to be taken back to this family who are called the Ironwoods. They are not nice. She is taken back to 1776. Karen, go ahead and insert any and all Hamilton references now.
Listen.
Brittany's here, too.
It was a lot. Especially because, okay, before we finish this synopsis, I'm just going to tell you the type of mode that I was in. I listened to Hamilton on the bus ride, and so I was listening to Hamilton, like, you know, the whole time I'm, like, reading this. Oh. Then I've been listening to the Imitation Game soundtrack at work. So then they jump to London in the 1940s, and I'm like, stop it. Just, I can't. The parallels were too much for me to handle that one day. It was just too much.
That is a little crazy.
But anyway, all right, get back with your thing. But that's my little story.
Anything, Karen, before I continue?
It was just, if he had actually shown up, I think I would have cried a little. But he didn't, so we're fine.
Okay. So Etta is taken back to 1776, where the lovely Mr. Ironwood, known as the Grand Master, yes, he has an evil title and everything, basically steals her mother, kidnaps her mother, holds her hostage, and says, I'm going to send you off. You need to find this thing. And Etta is completely unaware of what being a traveler is. She's not trained. She has none of the skills, really, that it takes to be a traveler, yet she still has to do this. And Etta is incredibly brave. Etta is also a musical prodigy. She can play the violin, and she's very talented at it. So she basically gets taken aboard this ship at first, when they first cross over through the passage, and she meets the legal pirate. His piracy is legal. He stresses it many times. His name is Nicholas. And they meet, and there's kind of a thing, because Nicholas is from this time period, and it's basically a time period where black men and women have no rights, they have no freedoms, they're basically slaves, and yet Nicholas is free. And he is a pirate. He's on a boat with someone else, and they take over the ship basically because it was the direction he was given. He was told to take Etta and Sophia and bring them to the Grand Master. And so what happens is Etta decides she's not going to follow this Ironwood's plans. She's going to go do what she needs to do. And she kind of takes off on her own, which is very, very dangerous, because when you travel through a passage, you should really be prepared to have the clothing of the time period and money and all of these things that you would need. And Etta just kind of takes off. She takes some of the things that she needs, but it's not very well thought through. And considering she's only ever traveled one time before, it's not great to do it on your own. So Nicholas sees her and decides that he's going to take off after her because he feels like he should protect her on some level. And he also needs to make sure that I'm going to say this, and I'm not really sure if I'm going to say it right. So if you guys have a different way to pronounce it, let me know. The Astrolabe, is that how you say it?
Astrolabe? I said it in my head.
Yeah, okay. So the Astrolabe, which is this artifact that belongs to Etta's family. And this is what Ironwood wants. And he explains to them that it can tell you before you travel through a passage where the passage goes. But later on, we find out that that's not exactly the truth. And so the two of them take off, Nicholas and Etta, take off through all these different places and time periods to try to find the Astrolabe and where Rose, who's Etta's mom, has hidden it, because she's taken it and hidden it. And she's been on the run from the Ironwoods for a very long time. So let's talk a little bit about the characters, because I really do enjoy the characters in this. So we have Etta. She's kind of a strong girl. She's out of her time, but she's very adaptable. So what did you guys think of Etta?
She was amazing. I loved her so much. And actually, I can say that about, like, most of the characters in this book, except for the ones you're supposed to hate, obviously. But
Yeah.
But the characters were so good. And I loved that Etta wasn't this damsel in distress. Like, she took matters into her own hands. And, you know, of course she needed saving sometimes, because she doesn't know how this whole time traveling thing works, but she's very resourceful and very determined, and she has gone through a lot in this book and yet is still as persistent as ever. And I loved that the parts on the ship were probably my favorite, because we were still kind of getting to know the characters a little bit, and you saw how strong-willed she was, because she kind of determined on her own, like, all right, you know, these people don't expect me to really know what I'm doing, and they don't expect me to manipulate them while they're trying to manipulate me. And so she's kind of getting in the game much earlier than anyone thinks she can. And she's so good at winding people around her finger. And that dinner scene and everything just solidified, like, my love for her, because she stood up for Nicholas and she did what she knew was right, even though it could potentially, like, get her in trouble. And it just showed that she's got this, like, fire within her that I really appreciated.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. That dinner scene and that was towards the very beginning of the book, mm-hmm. was really, really enjoyable because she was not having it. Like, she's a girl from 2015 and she's going to show you what that time period looks like, no matter where she is, no matter how careful she has to be. She's not going to play the, you know, the coy game of having to be this sweet girl who isn't supposed to have a brain. She's going to show you exactly what she thinks. And I love that. And I also loved that, yes, she kind of jumped into traveling and took it upon herself, but she still had weaknesses when it came to that, too. It wasn't just a perfect kind of Mary Sue thing. It took her time to adjust. She had to learn, and she had to learn on the move, which isn't always easy to do, but she did those things, and it wasn't just like she snapped her fingers and all of a sudden she could do it. Like, it definitely was different than that. So I did enjoy her. How about you, Brittany? What did you think?
Yeah, I loved her. And I don't know what it is. I have a hard time coming around to characters like Etta. But I think because of what you guys were saying, how she had this like strong headedness, but she was like kind of like smooth about it, like when to employ it and when to like sit back and kind of like take in her surroundings and like figure out a way to use the world to her advantage. And then, but she still had like these impulses to just start like running and like, you know, or just like walk away and get lemonade and not realize that that is going to throw every like Nicholas into a tizzy. You know what I mean? It's just like she's trying to see the world through everyone's eyes, but that world keeps changing every like, you know, few hours. So I really liked that type of seeing that type of character, like not in one set world. Like, you know, like I've had a really hard time when I first read The Hunger Games, like getting used to Katniss's, like, you know, the way she was, but that was one set world. Whereas this is like, I think because we were bouncing around so much, I really, really enjoyed her.
Yes. Very cool. All right. Let's talk about Nicholas. What did you guys think about him?
Oh, Nicholas. Well, I really liked him. From the start, as soon as like, you know, he came onto the scene, I'm like, oh, this is the guy, this is who we're going to be following around. And I just kept wanting to know more and more and more about his life, because I did find his story confusing at first, because, you know, you get Nicholas and Julian together, but then all of a sudden, like, and he's in a different time and climbing a mountain and all this stuff. But then you meet him on the ship and they're like, oh no, he's been doing this forever. Like, and you're like, wait, did he ever actually leave? Like, am I getting, I was so confused for a little while, but then to find out all the layers of Nicholas's story and how, like, he knows that the world, like his place in the world will change. Like, you know, there's a better future somewhere down the line. Like, you know, but he like found a way to make his own life in his time period, and he's like so proud and strong, and I just loved him so much that he stuck to the life that he grew up in 1776, as opposed to like trying to, you know, like take what he learned about the future and like bring it back with him. I really, really enjoyed his character.
Yeah, I thought he was so well constructed and, like you said, so layered. And I think that's what was really interesting about him, is that he truly was a character from 1776. Some of the other characters, you're not really sure where their place in time is. You know that Grandfather Ironwood has set up his homestead for whatever reason in 1776, even though that's not really where he's from. So he makes everyone travel to him during that time period. But for Nicholas, this is where he's from. This is where he grew up. So to see him and watch him kind of adapt when they're not in 1776, and to see how he kind of works and stuff, it was fascinating. I loved this character. I really, really did. And also to see you still get the undertones of who he would be if he lived in 1776, but, you know, he treats females like they're a little delicate sometimes, and he wants to be the protector, and he sometimes can be a little overprotective. But again, back then, that was kind of the rules of, you know, being a gentleman in a way. And so I think it was really interesting to see how he kind of fought, knowing that there were things that were different in the future for how women were treated, how they could dress, what they could do, compared to what he grew up in and what he was rooted in. So I thought that was really interesting about him. How about you, Kerr?
I absolutely loved him. And I think the best word for it is layered, like you were saying, because he's got all of this interesting stuff to him where he is very, like, I don't want to say controlling, but protective. He is overprotective. But at the same time, every single time Edda surprises him, it reveals another part of him, because he, while he's protective of her, he also lets her be her own person and realizes how strong she is. And I think what she revealed in him was my favorite part about him. But it was also nice to see this character who grew up in this time period and is a bit more conservative, but at the same time, he wasn't like stereotypical, you know? He was a guy, and like he said, like, you know, he's been with women before and he's done things that he's not super proud of, and he is kind of a, you know, a legal pirate, but at the same time, he's still a good person. And I thought that dichotomy was really interesting.
Yeah, and I also found it really interesting because he struggled with the fact that in his time period, he's, you know, he's an African American, he's not anyone of any rank or any power, and yet Edda always treated him as an equal, like it was nothing. Like he was just a person, which is, you know, what it is for the most part today. And so I think that took him by the most surprise, like he didn't know what to do with that. And at one point, one of his shipmates says to him, he's like, she is your equal, like that's the girl for you. And he's like, absolutely not. Because back then it was illegal for white and black people to be in a relationship. That was absolutely not a thing. Like that could never happen. It was actually against the law. And so he wouldn't even like begin to think about that, because that's not something that was available in a sense to him. So it was interesting to watch him kind of maneuver those aspects of things too. So I don't know. I found him just really fascinating.
Yeah. And you brought up a good, like one of my favorite scenes in this entire book is when like he finally, like, because he's so resilient and he is a man of his time and he wants to go back to his time and at the end of the day, because he has all these opportunities waiting for him there, that he doesn't want to ask this one question to Edda. And that question is like, in your time, could we like have danced, like, you know, and no one would turn their head. And she's like, yeah, like that's normal. Like it's not a big deal in 2015. And he like didn't want to ask that because he didn't want that possibility, like, you know, in his mind, because he was a man of his time and he wanted to go back. And that, like, you know, that answer would have changed his future. And oh my God, that scene was just, it's so tiny, but it was like amazing.
Yes.
And I love that she decided to not make him white. Like she could have just as easily made him white, but the fact that she didn't complicated this story even more. And it was this thread that continued throughout every single time period that they went through. And it was something I loved, the fact that Edda like kept forgetting about it, because I think in today's time, I would hope me and, you know, a lot of my friends and stuff, like, you don't even think about that anymore. And I love that Edda, like, it didn't even occur to her until, you know, he would, like, stare at the sidewalk and not let her touch him. And she's like, oh, yeah, you know, we're in, like, the 1800s and that's not cool. And I think she didn't have to add that other layer to the story, but the fact that she did made it even better.
Exactly. All right. Before we just talk about Nicholas the entire time, that is a distinct possibility. Let's talk about Captain Hall, who we get a brief glimpse of. And I have to say, what I liked about this novel in particular is that even the minor characters, even if they're only on the page for like 10 pages, you want to know more about them. Did you guys? I definitely want. I don't know about you guys, but there are so many of them. I was like, but can we get some more of them? Because I think they're really, like, they need to be there more.
Yeah. Can Hall have, like, a spinoff, like, where it's just yes. stories of him and his wife and everyone wife. Else? And I just want I that know. Whole history.
Like, I loved it. Like, every character was interesting. And even Chase, because here's the thing. Hall raised a bunch of basically orphans together in a house with his wife. His wife who, oh my God, he talks about her all the time. And she passed away. So we don't actually ever meet her in the story. But you learn through Nicholas and through Chase, because they grew up together with Hall. Like what the wife was like and how important it was. And then they talk a little bit about what happened to Captain Hall when his wife passed away and how bad he was and they didn't understand. And then later on down the line, some things happen and it's brought up again. And I don't know. I loved it. And the interesting part about Hall is this. So Hall is a distant relation to the Ironwoods, but he is not a traveler. He cannot travel through the passages. But he is something called a guardian. So within this world, there are three distinct kind of people. There are the guardians, the travelers, and then there are the thorns, which is interesting. So let's talk about a sec for the guardians. They are basically people who are related but cannot travel through time. So they keep track of the people who are going through the passages, so the passengers, of when they were there, and they help them, you know, keep an eye out. And if someone's looking for someone, it's a way to find them, which is good and bad if you're trying to be sneaky and get to different places. So it's an interesting role to play. So Captain Hall is a guardian and he kind of does his thing. And he also is a ship captain. So he can kind of go to the different places in the 1700s by boat to check out the different passages and see what's going on. So, but I did really like him and I could definitely use more of him. And then we have Rose, and Rose is Etta's mom. And
she's the worst.
Yeah, she's not great.
What?
She's interesting.
I loved her.
She's interesting because she's complicated. Do you know what I mean?
The last five pages. I was so mad at her.
Yeah, it's rough. But. So we meet Rose and we get these stories of Rose from Etta's point of view, and she's a little cold and she kind of is distant from her daughter. And then, but there's this moment where she gives Etta these earrings. And then as the story unfolds, you learn why the earrings are so important. And you also hear of the times when she would play games with Etta and talk to Etta and like show her all these things. Remember Etta, you must remember the story. And basically, that was her version of training her. There was no formal training. There was no telling her she was a traveler. This was just the way it was and how things were shaped. So I think that she's incredibly complicated because her goal is to always protect the world, to protect the timeline. Because within this story, the timeline is already kind of altered. So they're already living on an alternate timeline, which I didn't realize so much until the end when they really start to like hash it out, which is interesting and complicates the story even more, but we'll get to that part. So Karen, tell me why you liked Rose.
I just thought like she was so strong and powerful throughout her entire life. And it was, I don't know. She was just memorable and absolutely brilliant. And even though I did not like the way that she was distant from her daughter, I think it's clear that she still loved her daughter, but she knew the importance of what had to happen. And the fact that she hid all of those clues throughout her entire life to kind of lead her to this point, just, it blew my mind. And, you know, to Alexander Bracken, too, who layered this story the way that she did, I think it unfolded so seamlessly. And so it was so clever that, I don't know, I understand why you guys are like, I don't really like her, but I think she's so intelligent and she could see the big picture that I really respect her for that.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely respect and understand that, but I think the part I have the hardest time with is at the end when we find out what she's actually done and the lengths to which she would go to do this, to make sure things were safe. And And she, you know, she killed her best friend, the woman who took care of them forever. And that, I think, is where I'm like, oh, that's, it's a choice. And it's not an easy choice, but was it a necessary choice? Do you know what I mean? I think that's where my question lies with her. Yes, she made choices and they were not easy and she did what she thought was right, but was it necessary? And there's a difference in that, in those two things. So I don't know. All right, Brittany, tell us all your Rose thoughts.
I did like her up until the end. I really did. I thought every time that Etta, like, you know, remembered something from her past, or just like the simple fact that her mom changed the paintings at the end, and like I get why she wasn't always around because she was like taking care of things and doing stuff like that. That none of that bothered me. What bothered me was when she showed up and Nicholas, like, he just, like, she, Etta just disappeared and she was gone, and she, like, her mother's first thought was, where is the astrolabe? And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, you clearly, like, in my mind at that moment, she didn't care about Etta. Like, it just didn't, like, she was an afterthought. She's like, oh, well, she served her purpose and, like, you know, got me back to this point. That's how I read her in that moment, maybe because I was just so focused on, you know, figuring everything else out. But in, she probably does know that Etta's okay, but she literally has no idea where she is. She gives Nicholas like this ridiculous deadline to me. It was like, it was almost worse than our Ironwood deadline. I'm like, the man is bleeding, cannot stand. And she's like, okay, I'll see you in a week and you better have all this stuff.
And he's like, how about a month?
Yeah. And he's like, I don't think so, crazy lady.
Yeah. Good old Nicholas. All right.
I didn't like her up until that point.
Yeah, the end was a little rough when you actually get to see the traveler Rose. I think it's a little bit different than the other parts of Rose we had seen. Yeah. All right, so let's talk about Alice, who we mentioned briefly. Alice is, basically, she's Etta's teacher. She teaches Etta how to play the violin. Her and her husband, Oscar, work with Etta. They've always been in her life. And when Rose is traveling, she actually meets a young Alice, which I really liked that scene a lot. I thought it was really cool. And Alice is able to tell her some of the things, so she knows a little bit more about her past and a little bit more about her mother, because she really doesn't have any information to go on. She just knows that these are the places she has to go because of the paintings. And I really liked Alice. She was very sweet and very kind. So yeah, do you guys like Alice?
Yeah, I liked Alice fine.
Yeah.
All right, and now we have Grandfather Ironwood, also known as the Grandmaster, or Cyrus is his name. Why are all the really crazy people named Cyrus? Do you guys notice that in books? Like, is that the new creep name, Cyrus? Anyway, so he is a horrible person. Like, literally, that's the description I have for him.
I know, horrible. I was like, that's the only person thing written down for him.
I didn't really think it needed much more explaining beyond that. He's a loon, and he's manipulative and maniacal, and I can't think of any other M words right now. But he's a terrible, terrible man. And he is basically there were four families of travelers. And they used to each have a role, and they would switch roles every couple of years so that no one family got too much power. Well, then bad things started to happen, and they would go and mess with each other's timelines. And essentially what happened was he had a first wife named Minerva, and he hit her back in a timeline that he thought no one would be able to get to. And somebody did, and they killed her. So ever since that point forward, he kind of made it his goal to destroy the other families and bring them all under his rule as the Grand Master. And he's done that. If they didn't join, he killed them, or they became what are known as the Thorns. So there's a group of people who oppose the Grand Master and their travelers and guardians alike, and they've managed to hide themselves from him. Not everyone's been able to do it. Very few have, but there are a group. So they're like the rebel force, if you will. And I'm working with what we got here. So they kind of still try to go and mess up his timeline whenever they can, or his family's. And essentially what happens is that they're all looking for the astrolabe, because the astrolabe, when we initially think that it can only sense the passages and tell you where they'll go, is not the case. The astrolabe actually can create new passages to new times. So the passage that was created for Minerva and was destroyed after she was killed, meaning that Cyrus could never go back and try to warn her or protect her or save her. So he can make a new passage and actually get to Minerva and save her now. There are these things within the story called ripples. So if you adjust something in a time period or change something just a little bit, it's a ripple. Okay. That just changes a little bit of the stuff. But as the ripples get bigger or more important, it can shift you onto an entirely different timeline. You would live in the time period that you grew up in and that you lived in, but nobody there may know you. Everything would be different for you. So I think that aspect of the time travel is actually really interesting, and I really need to know more about it. Like, I need a little mini book on time travel in this world, because it would be amazing.
It was one of the more, like, it was different, I think. I think time travel has been done a lot and in a lot of different ways. And this is one that I haven't necessarily seen explained this way before, because I really liked the sort of like parallel streams of the years that like the days continuously move forward at the same rate. You can just jump from year to year to year. At the same time, it was hard at first to read about it, because it was like they just sat there and explained it. And I think sometimes that is necessary, especially for a book as complicated as this. But I kind of got lost a little bit at first. But as the story went on, it was easier to understand the concept.
Right. So basically, the passage that you go through will always take you to the year. The year of the passage never changes. So like when Etta came through the passage and ended up in 1776... that passage will always lead to 1776. However, if she left on August 2nd of 2015, she would end up there on August 2nd, 1776. So the days always coincide with where you're coming from, but the actual passage itself is a year. Does that make sense?
Yeah, which is another year marker. And that's another great thing that Bracken did in this book is like, she gave all these deadlines with specific dates, and like Edda's like, whatever, it doesn't matter. But Nicholas was like, no, there has to be a reason why he has to have this done in a certain amount of time, because he has to be at a certain day. Like, you know,
right.
It's, and like, you can't cross paths with yourself, which is why the days really matter. Like, because if you're traveling, you have to keep like very detailed logs, like, oh, I was here on like the 5th of August, 1776. So I can never go back to the 5th of August. Unless, like, I left, like, you know, August 5th at night, I can go August 5th at, like, 2 in the morning, you know?
Right. Yeah, exactly. And that's what I think is so interesting, because this is, time travel is usually way more flexible. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can go back to places, you can just miss your, there's lots of things that are usually way more flexible about it. Mm-hmm. This is a little bit more rigid time travel, but I still like it. Like, I still think it's really cool. And I like the idea that there are these passages that you travel through and they put you in a very specific place.
And I like that there are limits, because a lot of times in time travel, like if you think of Doctor Who, you know, where like they've seen themselves and just they can't necessarily interact with themselves because that'll change things. But you pretty much are like all powerful. This is very specific and there are a lot of rules. Mm-hmm. And I think that makes it harder for them to go against Ironwood, which of course is kind of the whole point. Like he does feel like he's this master of time and that he can he controls everything, so it makes him more formidable too.
Exactly. Well, and he controls the Guardians, so he can know, well, you went through that passage, I know you're going to turn up there, I'm going to send, you know, this person back on this date and leave a message so that they're watching for you when you get there. Like it's not easy because he controls most of the Guardians and Travelers, so they're hunting them as they're trying to get to this place where the astrolabe is hidden and find the passages that make up the place. And here's the thing. Rose, in this case, was incredibly smart. Every place that Rose chose to go to travel through to hide the astrolabe was hard. it was World War II. It was Paris right before the Reign of Terror, I think it was. Was that when they were in Paris? In the late 1600s, right?
Anyone? I think they were in the... I'm sorry, I was looking at it, actually.
Oh, okay. I'm like...
Yeah, no, I think they're in the 1800s, in Paris, 1880.
Yeah, okay, so.
Never mind, okay. I'm like, I know that there was one way back there. And then they were in this, like, temple in Cambodia that was, there were tigers and, like, a cobra. And, like, I thought it was, you know, Tarzan going on or the Jungle Book. It was crazy.
Yeah, that was, like, 1650 or something. Like, it was insane. I saw that date and I was like, what?
See, so Rose took the most perilous journey she could, because she didn't want people to follow her. She didn't want anyone to be prepared for what was coming. And I loved that about her. She was like, it's okay. You want to follow me? Let's go to World War II. Like, she was like, in London, where they're constantly bombed every day. Yep, let's do that. If you're going to be adventurous, this is where you're going to have to go. So I thought that was really interesting, because we went to some really cool places in time because of the way Rose chose. Do you know what I mean? I liked it. It was interesting. And then just a couple more people, and then we'll talk a little bit more about plot points. But we also met Hassan, who comes to us towards the end of the story. He is kind of like a great cousin or a great uncle, I'm not really sure, to both Rose and Etta. So he's from the past, and he is the son of Etta's great-great-grandfather. Yes? Yes.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. Anyway, so he's like at his age, the time when she runs into him. I liked him a lot. I thought he was really interesting. Then we have Julian Ironwood. We meet Julian in the very beginning of the story. He is the one that Nicholas is assigned to travel with. And Nicholas originally thought that he was signing up to be a full-fledged member of the family because he is an Ironwood. And so he can travel, but he's, you know, kind of not allowed in the family. But the Osiris is stuck with very few options of travelers, so he needs him to travel. And essentially he pairs him with Julian, his grandson, and they're off looking for the Astrolabe. And in the very beginning, in the prologue, we basically read about Julian's death from Nicholas's point of view. And it's interesting because you're not really sure what really has happened when you're reading it, and then later on you find out that he supposedly has died. And then we also learn about Augustus and Virgil. These were Ironwood's sons who are also deceased. Basically, Ironwood has taken the whole of the family that he had with his second wife and sent them out to look for the Astrolabe so he can save his first wife and create a new family. The man is awful, in case you missed that part earlier. They basically don't mean all that much to him. And then I just realized we skipped over Sophie, didn't we? Sophia. Which is not good. We kind of need her. So Sophia is the lone female of the Ironwood family that we've met. She's originally from 1910. So when she is thrust into 2015, it's a little bit of a culture shock for her, because in her family, she has no role. She is a female. She doesn't essentially matter. And she very much wants a role, and she very much wants to matter. And so she's the one sent after Etta to bring her back to Ironwood, and she does that, and after that she's pretty much cut out of the process. But Sophia does show up again at the end of the novel, and she's not very nice. I don't think we like her either, but just saying.
Really?
I liked her, but I didn't like her.
See, okay.
I liked that she came into her own and that she found her place. I didn't like the means she took to get there.
Yes, I will totally agree with you on that. I really, really hope that she becomes sort of like our anti-hero, because I feel as though the potential is there. It's so strong in her because, like, yeah, she's kind of a jerk, but she also has a reason to be, and she wants so much for herself, but also feels as though she doesn't deserve it because she is a woman. And I love that Etta taught her that, you know, you can be whatever you want to be, and you should just, you know, do what you want to do and earn the respect in that way. And I think she goes about it wrongly, but at the same time, like, I felt really bad for her and her station in life and her outlook and the way that she was treated. And I hope considering it looks like she's going to be in the second book and perhaps will end up playing a significant role, can kind of come to see where Etta's coming from and see that she can be a good person and still earn her family's respect or even defeat her grandfather without turning into like an evil overlord like he did.
Yeah, see, that was my concern. She definitely has the vibe to be evil overlord.
Yeah.
It's definitely there. So I'm not really sure, but I liked her at times. I liked that she came into her own and she was trying to kind of like spread her wings and do her thing. But at the same time, she stepped all over everyone to do it.
Yeah.
And that's just not okay.
I think she's trying to find that middle ground between taking what she likes, what she sees in Etta as a person and like, but also trying to be like, oh, I need to match my grandfather in strength right now. And the only way I know how to do that is to imitate him.
Right.
So hopefully in the next book, after spending some quality time with Nicholas, she'll be a better person.
She hates Nicholas, though.
I know, I'm so excited.
It's going to get ugly, ugly.
If Julian's not dead...
she's going to come too.
Exactly. I think she's going to be a better person because of it.
Spoiler alert.
So yeah,
Julian must not be dead.
I mean, if you're... Yeah.
If you're listening, you've read the book and you know already, so it's okay. But if you're listening, I've got nothing for you. All right, so let's talk about the ending of this book, because we kind of covered all the other stuff as we were talking. But what we get is this. So at the end of the book, Etta and Nicholas are in Damascus. This is the secret passage that Rose left. It's the last place that she moved the astrolabe to. And Nicholas gets hurt. He's very much on the brink of death. And Etta's freaked out because in our time, nobody dies of a fever. And yet that's very much what he could be dying from, is just a fever. And granted, he has a stab wound, but the stab wound was fixable. It's the fever and infection that you always have to worry about in these past historical times. Goodness me. So she's very worried about Nicholas, and she ends up having to go off to kind of, or she doesn't actually go off. She was going to kind of wait for Nicholas and go off and take Hassan and go to the temple to find the astrolabe. However, Sophia shows up, and she'd kind of been following them the whole time, which, you know, good on you. You made a move, but don't be ridiculous about it. And so she brings these two men with her that she thinks are guards or guardians, that are Ironwood guardians. Well, Sophia didn't really think to check things out first, so that was her first mistake. It was a little naive, not gonna lie. She just assumes that money and power are everything and everyone will kind of cave to what you need because you have those things. And because these men weren't the guardians, they take both her and Etta out to this temple out in, is it Palmyra? Is that how you say it? And they find the astrolabe, but these two men reveal themselves to be thorns. And so they basically are going to kill Etta, and they leave her there for dead. But Nicholas shows up, and he tries to fight valiantly, even though he's still very, very sick. And then Sophia makes them a deal. She says, you know, I'm perfect for you because I know all the things you're going to want to know about Ironwood. I'm going to tell you exactly what you need to know. I will help you because she really kind of comes off a little diabolical. She basically wants to go and destroy this man. She wants to rip him to shreds. I did like her for that. Showed a little spirit. I'll give her points there. But so she reveals this plan. Etta tries to destroy the astrolabe. It doesn't work. The thorns take it, and the thorns and Sophia take off and leave Nicholas and Etta for dead. When Nicholas first arrived, he fired a gun, and I thought he hit one of the thorns. Although I noticed something when Etta said, oh, my shoulder. So she and Nicholas are talking, and you realize that Etta's been shot, and then all of a sudden she bursts into glitter. And that's basically what it is, right? She like bursts into glitter, like that's a golden glitter, she's gone. And this is exactly what happened to Julian when he died. So he just assumes Nicholas is now like distraught. He thinks that Etta is dead and he'll never see her again. And then Rose comes, and Rose like, my daughter's not dead. The passage isn't closed. It's still open. here's the thing that I'm not really sure if Julian is still alive, is because when Julian fell and turned into glitter, the passage there was closed. It collapsed. So that meant it absorbed his energy when he died. That was the whole explanation in the beginning, remember? The one in Damascus didn't close. That's why Rose doesn't believe Etta is dead.
But in the passage with Julian, there are two passages there. They only discovered the second one because they went back. So maybe one of them closed, but what's her name? Rose went back and had created that other one already that right. didn't
maybe
know existed.
Maybe I misread it in the beginning. Because I thought in the beginning it took him forever to get back. Unless he just assumed that the passage was closed.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah, see, it took me a second. I had to think about that first. Because I, like, read it. I was like, what, what?
Can we just, for a second, go back to the fact that Etta burst into glitters? Because
yeah,
I was astounded and shocked. Like, comically so. You guys should have seen my face. I, like, looked up from the book and I was like, what just happened? And I was like, I don't want to read anymore. I doubt this is real. But, like, I was so surprised. And kudos to, you know, Alexander yeah. Bracken for doing that. But that was really surprising.
Yeah. And, like I was telling Karen right before we jumped on here, like, I was at, like, 98% in my Kindle read when this happened. And I'm like, there's no freaking way they're doing this with 98% of the book done. I'm like,
there's no fixing this right now. I'm like, there's not okay.
Enough time.
So essentially, now the mission is for Nicholas to go and find Etta. And for Nicholas to go find the Astrolabe. And for Rose to figure out where Etta ended up. Because what Rose explains to Nicholas is that Etta's not dead. She's just been shifted. Something in the timeline shifted. Therefore, it shifted where Etta is in time. So her last most stable place in time is where they have to find her. But they're not really sure where that is.
Yeah, and it could be anywhere.
Yeah, it could be. So that would mean the same thing for Julian, that Julian could be anywhere. If in fact what happened with Julian is the same as what happened with Etta.
I'm hoping that Julian is in, like, New Orleans, kicking it, having a good time. And I'm hoping that Etta is, like, somehow with Hall.
Like, that would be hysterical.
Yeah, like, that is her most, like, her most recent stable point would be, like, 1776, and she finds her way back to Hall. And he, as a guardian, takes her to all these passages. And then, you know, Julian is just having a good time in New Orleans because that's really – I don't understand why they would bring that specific memory up. I know they were doing it – we didn't really talk about Nicholas's mother and how he wanted to, like, find her and save her. But she died while he was hanging out with Julian in New Orleans, but that would be the perfect opportunity for him to find Julian and get their butts back to 1776 to save his mom too.
Yeah. So many things, so many possibilities. I love it. Anyway, so yeah, I don't know. I don't know where Julian can be. Oh, and one of the big things that also happens is that we didn't mention it before, is that Sophia was actually engaged to Julian.
And that's why she hates Nicholas so much.
Yeah. That's, yeah, she saw Julian kind of as her ticket to kind of society, if you will. So she's a little bitter, little bitter there. And then we said Sophia took off with the thorns. Well, Sophia made a poor choice again. The thorns basically beat her pretty brutally and left her in the middle of the desert for dead, except a lovely Bedouin tribe found her and were trying to save her. And Nicholas found her and was like, and now we're going to travel. And so Nicholas is planning on taking Sophia with him to travel and to find the Astrolabe and Etta and all of those fabulous things. So I could see the next book starting off incredibly snarktastic between Sophia and Nicholas. I could see it. It would be amazing. And then, yeah, wherever Etta is will also be very interesting because I'm sure Etta's perception of things is going to be different depending on where she is and what's going on.
And yeah, so I'm plus sure she didn't see her mother, so it's not like she still thinks her mother's in trouble.
Right.
And she's not.
Yeah, but so her she's goal
trying to get back to Nicholas, and also she might still be trying to get back to 2015 now to be right. like, well, I don't have Nicholas anymore. Maybe I could just find my mom.
But right.
Who knows?
And here's this is I think one of the more interesting statements that came out of Rose's big speech. Was that someone from the future told her that Etta had to destroy the Astrolab. And if she didn't, things would be horrible in the future. It all depended on Etta. That's why she never told or trained Etta, because Etta had to be a blank slate. But then Etta didn't manage to destroy it. So now the future itself is going to be vastly different.
Ugh, there's so much.
Who do you think that was?
Oh. I don't know. It's hard to tell.
I think it's Nicholas.
I think it's Julian, so because she doesn't recognize Nicholas.
Right, she doesn't. That was the only thing. She didn't recognize Nicholas. So it could be Julian.
She could be like, explain who you are. Or maybe she wanted him to explain who he was so that she, like, had confirmation.
Knew for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, just the way that she was, like, being, like, she was like, I don't need to tell you. Like, it right. just seemed weird to me. And also, if it was, like, old man Nicholas, maybe she wouldn't have recognized young Nicholas.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know. Like, I feel like we're missing a piece to the puzzle in there somewhere.
Yeah.
But,
This is why you should buy the book, so we can all go back.
Yeah, you're going to want to go back, I think, before the next one. You're going to want to have a nice little reread. Just because it's a beautiful, beautiful story. It is so well crafted, you guys.
That's
what I love about her writing.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Sorry. Everything felt really organic to me, too. Uh-huh. Like, even the love story was it was quick, but in a way that made sense. Like, they're yes. clearly pulled to each other, and the different layers of the entire story and how it unfolds in front of you was just it was so well done.
Right. It was a little quick, but it wasn't like insta-love. Do you know what I mean? It was mm-hmm. complicated. There were still so many things that would and wouldn't work, and how do you resolve them, and how do you, like, there was so much going on with that. But there was still this aspect of, I really like you. And, you know, I don't know. I just enjoyed all of it, so.
Yeah, Karen took the words right out of my mouth about, literally, I was going to say how organic it felt. Like, nothing felt rushed or, like, out of place, and you felt every little bit of tension that was woven between them, like, just right. because of, not even because, like, they were, you know, not meant for each other, but just, like, the layers of complication between, like, not only did they want to live their own separate happy lives, but they wanted to find a way to do it together, and, like,
exactly
for everything, and it was just so well done. And if he called her pirate one more time,
I meant to bring it up earlier, like, they have this whole joke going on. He was like, you would be a fine pirate. So he calls her pirate. And I'm just like, oh, I love this. I
loved it. It was so cute. And I will say, too, that even though this book employed the whole, like, miscommunication trope that I hate so much, or, like, not telling somebody one of your secrets that is, like, sort of vital for them to know, the trope, she twisted it in the end, because when Nicholas told Etta his, like, thing and what he had planned on doing and the reason why he initially followed her there, she wasn't mad at him. And I was like, thank you, because, you know, somebody who's thinking logically will understand where he's coming from.
Right.
And won't be mad about it. And the fact that, yeah, it was woven throughout the entire book and I was getting frustrated with it, in the end, it kind of didn't matter and it brought them closer too. And I enjoyed that aspect of it.
Yes. Yes. Oh, and one last thing that Rose dropped as a bombshell on our good friend Nicholas. So throughout the entire story, you have no idea who Etta's father is. And Rose is like, oh, by the way, we're not going to be the only ones looking for Etta. She's like, her father's name is Henry Hemlock, and he is the head of the Thorns.
You're like, ah, of course.
You knew that was coming, kids. You knew that was coming. Come on. But here's my question. What time is Rose from?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Because I feel, and this is what I love about this. you know when these, where they are now, these families, and when they were made to grow up. But I don't feel like it was always the time they were from.
Yeah, because Ironwood there had everyone meet him in 1776. Right. Yeah, and I feel like we're not meant to know where Rose is from necessarily.
Right.
But it's clear that she's grown up across the world and across time. Which just is such a cool concept. Cool.
I know. I love it. I want to be a time traveler when I grow up. Anyway, so do you guys have anything else you wanted to talk about? Because we've talked a lot. There's so much to say.
I just wanted to ask a dumb question. You guys going to read the second book? And did you see what the title is?
Oh, I didn't see the title. What is it?
I didn't see the title. What is it?
Oh, it's Wayfarer.
Oh, okay. Stop.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Oh, I love it already.
And yes, that's a solid yes.
Oh, it's happening. Yeah. It's
me happening. Too, even though, like I said, I had a little trouble getting into it. I'm especially after the ending. Are you kidding me? How could you not want to read the second book?
I would think once you got past, like, the first 50 to 75 pages, Karen, you would have been okay.
Yeah.
Once they started traveling, like, actually, like, after 1776, once they started traveling, it was a much different pace story. We will be back next week with a news episode. And then, of course, as a reminder, our February book is Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. Do read the book and also try to go see the movie because I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And it comes out like for Valentine's Day, so it's kind of perfect. All right. So until next time, I'm Jen.
I'm Brittany.
And I'm Karen.
Bye, guys.